The Vampire by John Polidori. Extract of a letter from Geneva. I breathe freely in the neighborhood of this lake. The ground upon which I tread has been subdued from the earliest ages. The principal objects which immediately strike my eye bring to my recollection scenes in which man acted the hero and was the chief object of interest. Not to look back to earlier times of battles and sieges, here is the bust of Rousseau. Here is a house with an inscription denoting that the Genevan philosopher first drew breath under its roof. A little out of the town is Ferney, the residence of Voltaire, where that wonderful, though certainly in many respects contemptible character, received, like the hermits of old, the visits of pilgrims, not only from his own nation, but from the farthest boundaries of Europe. Here, too, is Bonnet's abode, and, a few steps beyond, the house of that astonishing woman, Madame de Staël, perhaps the first of her sex who has really proved its often claimed equality with the nobler man. We have before had women who have written interesting novels and poems in which their tact at observing drawing-room characters has availed them. But never, since the days of Heloise, have those faculties which are peculiar to man been developed as the possible inheritance of woman. Though even here, as in the case of Heloise, our sex have not been backward in alleging the existence of an Abelard in the person of Monsieur Schlegel as the inspirer of her works. But to proceed, upon the same side of the lake, Gibbon, Bonnivard, Bradshaw, and others mark, as it were, the stages for our progress, whilst upon the other side there is one house built by Diodati, the friend of Milton, which has contained within its walls for several months that poet whom we have so often read together, and who, if human passions remain the same, and human feelings, like chords on being swept by nature's impulses, shall vibrate as before, will be placed by posterity in the first rank of our English poets. You must have heard, or the third canto of Childe Harold will have informed you, that Lord Byron resided many months in this neighborhood. I went with some friends a few days ago, after having seen Ferney, to view this mansion. I trod the floors with the same feelings of awe and respect as we did, together, those of Shakespeare's dwelling at Stratford. I sat down in a chair of the saloon, and satisfied myself that I was resting on what he had made his constant scat. I found a servant there who had lived with him. She, however, gave me but little information. She pointed out his bedchamber upon the same level as the saloon and dining-room, and informed me that he retired to rest at 3, got up at 2, and employed himself a long time over his toilette, that he never went to sleep without a pair of pistols and a dagger by his side, and that he never ate animal food. He apparently spent some part of every day upon the lake in an English boat. There is a balcony from the saloon which looks upon the lake and the mountain Jura, and I imagine that it must have been hence he contemplated the storm so magnificently described in the third canto. For you have from here a most extensive view of all the points he has therein depicted. I can fancy him like the scathed pine, whilst all around was sunk to repose, still waking to observe what gave but a weak image of the storms which had desolated his own breast. The sky is changed, and such a change, O night, and storm and darkness, ye are wondrous strong, yet lovely in your strength as is the light of a dark eye in woman. Far along from peak to peak, the rattling crags among leaps the lyre thunder. Not from one lone cloud, but from every mountain now hath found a tongue, and Jura answers through her misty shroud back to the joyous Alps who call to her aloud. And this is the night, most glorious night, thou wert not sent for slumber. Let me be a share in thy far and fierce delight, a portion of the tempest and of me, how the lit lake shines a phosphoric sea, and the big rain comet dancing to the earth. And now again 'tis black, and now the glee of the loud hills shakes with its mountain's mirth, as if they did rejoice o'er a young earthquake's birth. Now, where the swift Rhine cleaves his way between heights which appear as lovers who have parted in haste, whose mining depths so intervene that they can meet no more, though broken-hearted, though in their souls which thus each other thwarted, love was the very root of the fond rage, which blighted their life's bloom and then departed, itself expired, but leaving them an age of years all winter, war within themselves to wage. I went down to the little port, if I may use the expression, wherein his vessel used to lay, and conversed with a cottager who had the care of it. You may smile, but I have my pleasure in thus helping my personification of the individual I admire, by attaining to the knowledge of those circumstances which were daily around him. I have made numerous inquiries in the town concerning him, but can learn nothing. He only went into society there once, when Monsieur Pictet took him to the house of a lady to spend the evening. They say he is a very singular man, and seem to think him very uncivil. Amongst other things they relate, that having invited Monsieur Pictet and Bonstetten to dinner, he went on the lake to Chillon, leaving a gentleman who travelled with him to receive them and make his apologies. Another evening, being invited to the house of a certain lady, he promised to attend, but upon approaching the windows of her ladyship's villa, and perceiving the room to be full of company, he set down his friend, desiring him to plead his excuse, and immediately returned home. This will serve as a contradiction to the report which yon tell me is current in England, of his having been avoided by his countrymen on the continent. The case happens to be directly the reverse, as he has been generally sought by them, though on most occasions apparently without success. It is said, indeed, that upon paying his first visit at Coppet, following the servant who had announced his name, he was surprised to meet a lady carried out fainting. But before he had been seated many minutes, the same lady, who had been so affected at the sound of his name, returned and conversed with him a considerable time, such as female curiosity and affectation. He visited Coppet frequently, and of course associated there with several of his countrymen, who evinced no reluctance to meet him, whom his enemies alone would represent as an outcast. Though I have been so unsuccessful in this town, I have been more fortunate in my enquiries elsewhere. There is a society 3 or 4 miles from Geneva, the centre of which is the Countess of Bruce, a Russian lady, well acquainted with the Agrément de la Société, and who has collected them round herself at her mansion. It was chiefly here, I find, that the gentleman who travelled with Lord Byron as a physician sought for society. He used almost every day to cross the lake by himself in one of their flat-bottomed boats, and returned after passing the evening with his friends about 11 or 12 at night, often whilst the storms were raging in the circling summits of the mountains around. As he became intimate from long acquaintance with several of the families in the neighbourhood, I have gathered from their accounts some excellent traits of his lordship's character, which I will relate to you at some future opportunity. I must, however, free him from one imputation attached to him, of having in his house 2 sisters as the partakers of his revels. This is, like many other charges which have been brought against his lordship, entirely destitute of truth. His only companion was the physician I have already mentioned. The report originated from the following circumstance. Mr. Percy Bysshe Shelley, a gentleman well known for extravagance of doctrine and for his daring in their profession, even to sign himself with the title of Athios in the album at Chamonix, having taken a house below, in which he resided with Miss M. W. Godwin and Miss Claremont, the daughters of the celebrated Mr. Godwin. They were frequently visitors at Deauty, and were often seen upon the lake with his lordship, which gave rise to the report, the truth of which is here positively denied. Among other things which the lady from whom I procured these anecdotes related to me, she mentioned the outline of a ghost story by Lord Byron. It appears that one evening, Lord B., Mr. Shelley, the 2 ladies, and the gentleman before alluded to, after having perused a German work which was entitled Phantasmagoriana, began relating ghost stories, when his lordship, having recited the beginning of Christabel, then unpublished, the whole took so strong a hold of Mr. Shelley's mind that he suddenly started up and ran out of the room. The physician and Lord Byron followed, and discovered him leaning against a mantelpiece with cold drops of perspiration trickling down his face. After having given him something to refresh him, upon inquiring into the cause of his alarm, they found that his wild imagination, having pictured to him the bosom of one of the ladies with eyes, which was reported of a lady in the neighbourhood where he lived, he was obliged to leave the room in order to destroy the impression. It was afterwards proposed, in the course of conversation, that each of the company present should write a tale depending upon some supernatural agency which was undertaken by Lord Byron, the physician, and Miss M. W. Godwin. My friend, the lady above referred to, had in her possession the outline of each of these stories. I obtained them as a great favour, and herewith forward them to you, as I was assured you would feel as much curiosity as myself to peruse the debauches of so great a genius, and those immediately under his influence. The end of an extract from the letter from Geneva. Footnote. The tale referred to, as created by Mary Godwin, has since been published under the title of Frankenstein, or The Modern Prometheus. Read by Rick Kistner for Litigo on the web at fcit.usf.edu.